Blog Talk Radio.
Gillette presents the Gillette Labs with Exfoliating Bar, a razor designed to take the hassle out of your routine with effortless shaving and one efficient stroke. The bar and the handle remove unseen dirt and debris that gets in the way of the blade, so nothing gets between you and a quick and easy shave. All with a lifetime warranty. Gillette, the best a man can get.
This is Dr. Chinchilla Donesia, the commissioner of WBNN. The those of you that have been having trouble tuning into WBNN's programming due to phone service provider issues with Metro, T-Mobile, or Cricket, I have a solution for you. Go to the Google Play Store or the Apple Play Store, download the TextNow app onto your cell phone, choose a phone number, and then you will be able to tune into all of WBNN's programming. I am the Honorable Dr. Chinchilla J.
Peace.
You are now listening to The Power of Thoughts featuring me, Tiana Speaks. This is a product of WBNN brought to you by Ngozi Times Multimedia. We are live from Lagos, Nigeria. Dial in 516-453-9133. I want to say happy anniversary to WBNN and Beverly Nation celebrating 10 years. Today's topic is violence and vulnerability. Vulnerability is the inability to resist hazard or to respond when a disaster has occurred. And vulnerability in crime, a person is vulnerable if they can't protect themselves from harm or exploitation due to their personal or situational circumstances. I have some wonderful guests today. I have Donald Lacey, Mikey D, Veronica Grant, Tawanda Moreau, and King George. I'm going to start with Donald Lacey. And Donald, I saw on TV on a show on CNN, and I was blown away. And I want him to talk about it because I was so inspired when I watched that segment on CNN. I was blown away at what he did. And I'm not going to tell you yet because it's going to blow you away as well. Donald Lacey, are you in the building?
Yes. How are you, Tiana?
Hi, how are you? So, Donald, let me tell you.
Every day I wake up, it's a great day.
Yeah. You are a blessing to so many people. I see you doing so many amazing things. So what I'm going to do, I don't want to tell you how you inspired me yet because I don't want to give your story away. I want you to be able to tell it from your point of view in your eyes. Tell everybody who you are before you start your story.
Well, my name is Donald Lacey, Jr. I'm from Oakland, California. I grew up as a small child in the 60s and the 70s at the height of the Black Consciousness Movement. I'm a child of the Black Panther Party. I used to go to their after-school program, their lunch programs, and grew up in the greatest black city in the planet, Oakland, California, at the height of the Black Liberation Consciousness Movement. I say all that because I am an unapologetic advocate for the black community, not to the deference or anyone else. I'm not against anybody. I'm just unapologetically pro-black. So I went to San Francisco State University where I graduated and was educated by Dr. Angela Davis, Dr. Wade Nobles, Dr. Richard King, the foremost purveyor of melanin and discoverer of melanin. And I use all those things I learned into my artistic abilities to do plays. I have a play now that's coming back after a two-year hiatus due to COVID called Color Struck, and people can look at that www.colorstruckplay.com. But what you're referring to is my 16-year-old daughter's brainchild, Lo Ishe, which is Igbo in Nigerian. It means love life in English. I gave her that name because I delivered her on 580 Freeway in Oakland on the way to the hospital while driving. True story. I had one hand on the wheel and one hand between her mother's leg, gently pulling out her infant-sized body. And right as she got to her shoulder, she dove on the floor of the car and made a splat. And a few minutes after that, Isn't She Lovely, the Stevie Wonder song from Songs in the Key of Life, came on the radio. So I knew right then that this child was destined for some divine purpose. I didn't know what, but she was a brilliant, bright leader amongst her peers. She was a peace activist, a successful conflict resolution mediator. And for those who don't know what that is, that's when teenagers work with other teenagers to resolve any disputes, beefs, conflicts, and she was very good at it because she was well-loved. On the summer of 1997, I would go back and forth between Oakland and Los Angeles because I'm in the entertainment business and have been my adult professional life. When I came home one summer, she was upset because one of her classmates had been murdered, And she told me she wanted to do something. And she wanted to help her write a play to honor her friend and to stop the violence. And she told me, "Daddy, I'm tired of seeing all these young black people die." And we just started to work on it. I went back to L.A., and when I was there working on a show on October 20th, 1997, she was murdered, an innocent victim to a shooting. So I stopped everything I was doing in L.A. and came back, and the night of her murder, I was really calling everybody that I knew, trying to find out what happened. And I found out that she was in the back seat of a van by a young man who had got into some type of dispute earlier than that day. And when they picked her up, she was sitting in the back seat. And the people who he had the dispute with had somehow found him on, followed them. And when his van stopped, four assailants went to the front of the van shooting at him. And my daughter was sitting behind him, and she unfortunately was hit by seven bullets and killed instantly. And, you know, I was devastated. But the last person I talked to that horrible night was my grandmother, Mother Pearl Franklin, who lived to be almost 102. And she told me what the devil meant for evil, God was going to turn to good. And right then, I put the word out. I didn't want nobody striking back on them dudes. I didn't want that on my daughter's memory. And we started her vision, which is the Love Life Foundation. And here we are a little over 25 years later. We just commemorated our 25th anniversary of working with young black youth who live at or below the poverty line. And it's been an amazing journey.
So take me through the night when your initial reaction and emotions when you found out that, you know, your child was murdered. What did you feel initially?
Well, it was originally outrage, anger, hurt, and all I wanted was revenge. And I remember, this was 97. We didn't have cell phones back then, or at least I didn't. And I got a page from my wife, 911-911-911. And I was at a comedy club. I just walked into the club, and I saw the page, and I was like, wow, what is going on? And I called her, and she couldn't even talk for about 10, 15 minutes. And then she said, "Luisha is dead." And it was like, it didn't compute. And then I said, "What do you mean?" She said she got killed in a car or van or something. And I just, man, I tore up the phone booth. I was running up and down Melrose Avenue in Hollywood screaming, and, you know, traffic on both sides. And then I called my best friend, queen of comedy, Laura Hayes. And, you know, we came up in Oakland together. I've been knowing her most of my adult life. And she and her husband, who has passed since then, she said, "Just come over here." And they watched over me. And, man, I was calling everybody. And people were paging me. "Hey, Mr. Lacey, we think we know who did it." And I said, "Nah, don't do nothing until I get back tomorrow. I want to be there when it goes down." So, really, I was just consumed with revenge because, you know, my daughter wasn't in no gang activity. Everybody in the neighborhood loved her. And, you know, she was such a beautiful young lady. The story got incredible coverage. I mean, it's touched a nerve in the community, and people were really shook and really upset. But like I say, when I prayed with my grandmother, then I thought about what my daughter had tried to teach me. She wanted to take her anger and grief that she was feeling for her friend being murdered and do something positive. So I heard the Creator tell me, no, love life. And, you know, the meaning of her name, and it's not lost upon me that that's what I needed to do. So, you know, as hard as I was grieving and as angry and as I was, I just focused on making something good happen. And now, to God be the glory, if you come to my city, Oakland, that raised me, that reared me, that taught me so many great things, every entering Oakland sign is voted on by the Oakland City Council on April 5th, 2016, says, guess what? Love life. Not only to honor my daughter's life, but to honor anyone who's ever been killed for any reason, and to remind us all, particularly in the black community, to love life, to treat each other with respect and dignity like Oakland was back in the 70s when I was growing up, you know? So we're trying to put that love back in the community. So that was my whole thing. And, yeah, it was a struggle. My daughter was my firstborn child, the love of my life. You know, I would have taken those bullets for her if I could. And for the first 10 years, I didn't even grieve. I mean, my whole family was devastated. Even my father, who, you know, wasn't necessarily an emotional man, and a man, you know, until I became a man, even told me he loved me growing up. But he was just, I had never seen my dad so devastated because everybody loved her, you know, so. I just took my anger and made a purpose, and now, you know, here it is 25 years later. You know, I've been to the White House. You know, we've been proclaimed from the floor of Congress. We've done all these great things. I've met, you know, I like to say, while I lost one, I've gained thousands of beautiful, powerful, intelligent, loving black children who, because of the crack cocaine epidemic, they weren't fortunate enough to have a strong black father in the house like I did, and my two uncles, and, you know, my father's friends who were like my uncles, you know, to put poor love into me. So when I get with these young middle school and junior high and high school students, the first thing I let them know is that I care about them and I love them. And that's what's missing. You know, they weren't fortunate as old, so we got all these single black women in a lot of cases, and even grandmothers raising, you know, their kids because their child is on drugs or incarcerated, you know, and they don't have, there's an old saying they used to say in the community back in the day, to be a man, you got to see a man. So when I go to speak to young people in the juvenile detention centers and jails, community and churches, first question I ask the young black men, I say, how many of you got your father in your life? And unequivocally, 60 to 70% don't. So, and that's by, I will add, social engineering. The crack cocaine epidemic, which has been clearly documented by the late, great Gary Webb, a white journalist, I'll add, who I had the pleasure to do one of the last interviews before he was murdered, published the book Dark Alliance. And by the way, all your listeners, don't take my word for nothing. Google it. Google Dark Alliance. He clearly proved beyond a shadow of a doubt that the United States government, under the auspices of the CIA, introduced distributed crack cocaine in the black community from Los Angeles to Oakland is where it started. In fact, that series Snowfall is based on that. So the government socially engineered getting the black man out of the household, and that's why we're dealing with what we have. And I'll add, the prison industrial complex was built on the crack cocaine epidemic, and that wasn't by accident. It was designed. Black men for a rock of crack cocaine were being sentenced to what they called indeterminate sentences, where if a young man on the corner was caught with a rock or two in his possession, he was given a disproportionately 118 years compared to a white offender with a half an ounce or more of powder to one. In fact, Barack Obama, one of the best things he did when he was president, he reduced that. It's still indeterminate sentencing, but look up indeterminate sentencing. This was such a crusade to warehouse and jail black men that they even had the probable cause law. One of my favorite Americans, the great Thurgood Marshall, the first black Supreme Court justice, I don't want to cuss. I don't know if this is terrestrial radio, but he basically, in his last statement before he retired, said, this BS is some of the most chicken poop stuff I've ever seen in my life, where if you black walking down the street, they have what they determine probable cause. They can search your car and search your possession for whatever. And in a lot of cases, and there was a case called the Rioters in Oakland where these rogue police officers were beating, torturing, planting drugs on people and locking them up. Then the three strikes law came. Three strikes, you're getting 25 to life. You know, your third strike could be stealing a pizza. There was even a case of a guy. So all of this was designed and engineered by the United States government to decentralize the black family and, more dangerous, to eliminate the black male from the household equation. So that's why, since crack cocaine was introduced, there's been a spike of murder and violence and incarceration in America. So, you know, getting back to your question, we have a lot of ills that we as a community I have to deal with, but I say forget all of the social engineering, forget what the CIA did, forget crack cocaine, forget all that. We have to love each other, and that's what I try to do, is raise the vibration of love on the, in the black community with our young black men and women.
So I know that you loved your daughter so much, you know, that you actually went to the prison of the person who, you know, was responsible for killing her and forgave him. Can you tell me, you know, we have a few minutes left, and then I want you to stay on because we want to get your, and we want to get your final thoughts. But I want to know how was that for you to be able to forgive, because that was so powerful to me. I couldn't believe that, like, that somebody could do that. You know, as a human, that's a very hard thing to do. Can you walk me through that?
Well, first of all, I want to say thank you to you, because you reached out to me a few years ago when it aired on Facebook. Yeah. We kind of were in touch for a while, then we lost touch, and I appreciate you being patient enough and circling back to me and allowing me the opportunity. I will tell my story, my daughter's story, anywhere and everywhere, because it's not lost on me that my daughter came to this earth to remind us all to love life. So we were on the news so much, less than 2 months after she was murdered, we had a town hall meeting December 18th, 1997. She was murdered October 20th, 1997, in City Hall. The mayor, who has become, at that time, who's become my dear friend, I call him Godfather, and I talk to him almost every day, the smartest man I know, former mayor of Oakland, L. Hugh Harris, gave us as a community organization the city council chambers. I was sitting in the city council. There was, and I'm not even exaggerating, there were 750 people in City Hall, a line outside the city council chambers to the door, because everybody was tired of my daughter's murder had touched such a nerve in the community. So we were on the news every day doing peace march. We did a peace march from the site she was murdered through the neighborhood of where the killers was from. One young man who was arrested on another charge was seeing us on the news every day. Almost every day we were on the news for like months. And he didn't know. He grew up with my daughter. He went to middle school and elementary school with her. They didn't know, the four assailants, that she was sitting in the back seat, because the windows was tinted, and they picked up the car and started following it after he had picked up her and Maya, her best friend, who was sitting in the front seat. So I got a call 2 days before Christmas 1997 from the investigative arm, and he said, a man confessed. And this kid was no man. He was 16 at the time. So I went and we had the press conference, and they told me he confessed, blah, 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 he felt bad, blah, blah, blah. And I thought, wow, I want to meet this kid one day because he has a conscience. He feels guilty, you know. So years and years went by. I got involved in the restorative justice process around 2010. I was trying to get it. His mom didn't want me to meet him. Then I got busy. And then I was at this McClymonts High School, the school my daughter went to, reunion, and one of his friends said, Chris wants to talk to you. And then I got back into the restorative justice process, and the lady who navigated it, Karina, who you saw on the CNN special, said he wants to write you a letter. So that letter sat on my desk for like 5 weeks. I couldn't open it. Finally, I opened it, and he said everything right. He just said how sorry he was. He said he loved my daughter. He didn't know. He felt so bad for participating in death. So then I said, okay, I want to meet him. And this guy would have it. A few months later, because it's a long, drawn-out process, I was contacted by Van Jones, who coincidentally or not, was at that first march that we did on the spotter. He was living in Oakland at the time. This is before he started working at CNN, with 1,000 people out there. Barbara Lee was out there, everybody. And I found this out when we were filming the episode. He was out there. And they said, hey, we have this show called The Redemption Project where offenders can meet those who offend them and have a dialogue. So we had the dialogue. He said all the right things. It lasted maybe 4 or 5 hours. We took one or two breaks. And then finally I was able to look him in his eye and tell him, like I'm talking to you, the magic three words, I forgive you. You know, and
yeah.
I did it for myself as much as him. And I'm going to tell you, as I walked out of that prison, I felt like I weighed 5 pounds. And I cannot tell you, just like you said, I've gotten emails on Facebook and emails from all over the world, people telling me horrific stories. This lady was 9 months pregnant. Her husband threw her down the stairs, and the baby had birth defects. And she said, I would never thought of forgiving him. When I saw what you did, I'm considering it. So I realized I did it to set an example of forgiveness, and hopefully other people will follow. Because when you carry around all that anger and animosity, I've seen several parents like me that have their kids murdered, and they're so angry and bitter. I didn't want to be that person. So, yeah, to God be the glory. It really touched a lot of people.
Well, I thank you so much for telling me your story. I want you to stay on because I have other people who have went through, you know, similar things, and I want, if you're okay with me, on because
sure.
I want
to just say real quick, and folks want to see what we do, go to www.lovelifefoundation.org, lovelifefoundation.org. Thank you.
Yeah, stay on, and because I want to get your final thoughts, you know, on what you're going to be hearing next, you know. And I really appreciate you, and you're definitely inspiring. And I know you. There's 19 million people listening, you know. So, you know, I know you're touching somebody, and I wanted that. So thank you for coming on, and thank you very much. Now I have my next guest, Veronica Grant, who has a organization called the JJM Foundation. Veronica, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Veronica.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. So Veronica is actually a friend of mine. I know her. She's in my area, so I know her personally. And I actually did an event a couple of years ago where, you know, for my birthday, I realized your birthday is symbolic of 365 days that you had to give back to someone else. And I was, like, tired of having bad birthdays. And then one day I, you know, was upset with my friend because she ruined my birthday. And I, you know, I decided to, you know, eat with the homeless guy. And in that moment, I realized that, you know, I want to give back. This man has a bad day every day. So with that being said, like, she was one of the people that I invited. I got all nonprofits and charities, you know, under one roof. And, you know, so I wanted to give them exposure. So, Veronica, can you take me to that day of what happened, you know, to your mother?
Okay. First, I want to thank you for having me on the show, and to the gentleman that just spoke, just gave me a whole different outlook on how to deal with what we're going through. Right now, for me, I know I have to let go. You know what I mean? Like, I know that was your daughter, and this was my mother, and I see things, I was looking at things so different. But with what I just listened to you say is making me want to forgive. You know, and
wow.
As you said, wow. How it heats you up inside. Yeah, it do, because you walk around, and it's like you are just, you're a time bomb waiting. You're just ticking, ticking, ticking. And I never looked at it like that. But to let y'all know a little what happened with me, I was dating a guy back in 2009, and he was out in the street. And, you know, sometimes us women, we don't pay attention to what's going on around us or what our loved ones are doing. And he committed a murder in Pleasantville, and from that murder, they retaliated, and which they thought my mother was his mother. And
I said you have a little feedback in the background, but continue.
And on December 11th in 2009, someone was sitting outside my home. I guess they'd been out there like all day just trying to see how things was going, the movement of my home and everything. So my daughter picked my mom up from work, and my mom and my daughter drove up. Nothing looked no different or nothing. So they came in the house. I was upstairs doing, you know, my little cousin's hair. My mom and them came in the house, and my mom sat down in her room, and she was, you know, eating some popcorn. And whoever was outside, they came and they shot through the window, which killed my mom. And just to be home, to hear the gunshot, the smell of gunpowder, it was like, it really took me to a different state of mind. The gentleman which caused the murder, he received 58 years. And the other guy that had something to do with it, they didn't have enough evidence to convict him. So with me, I mean, like, I'm reaching out and I'm calling the police department, and it's like we're getting no justice. I mean, I'm not prejudiced or anything, but if it was a white kid, they would do more. And it's like sometimes it's like they just forget about us. And it's cold. It's like cold case murders. There's so many cold case murders here in Atlantic City that it's like they're not trying to solve any of these murders. And with me, I mean, I reach out, I mean, the homicide unit, and it's like they're not giving us no answers. Like, they don't call us to tell us nothing. And I say, and I had an interview with a journalist, and I said to her that they need to change the laws, because some people want to say something, but they be scared for their life. Because then you put their name in the papers, all in their discovery, and people are afraid of it. Like, it was a gentleman that happened to be outside that night, and he seen everything that took place. And when the cops went to him to question him, he said he don't remember what happened because he still has to live here, and y'all not going to protect him. So that's what we're facing here in Atlantic City. So I'm taking my pain and I'm putting it into something positive. And right now I'm in the process of opening up a safe haven for kids 11 to 17 because we have nothing here to save these babies out here. I mean, and it's and it's sad because we're losing young ones every day. And I just don't know. So I try to beat the streets when somebody get murdered. I try to go to their home and I try to, you know, like, let the family know what I went through and how we got to stick together and how we got to walk together as one. I mean, like, we don't have no togetherness. There's no unity. We don't stick together when ours are being killed. And I just hope things can change. Like, we need to change these things because we're losing too many of our babies. They are our future.
That's
what I'm trying to do to deal with my pain.
So talk me through your healing process. Like, how have you, you know, I'm pretty sure you might not have fully healed, but talk to me at where you're at right now. How did you get there?
It took me a long time to get here. It took 5 years I ran from dealing with what I went through. For 5 years, I just kept trying to keep myself busy so I wouldn't think about what I was going through. So about 2012, a friend of mine brought this to me and said, listen, I said, Your mom came to me in a dream and told me that I need to bring this to you. And this is what I need you to do. And he wrote everything out for me. He said, you need to save these kids. You're the person. You have the voice. You can do this. And me and him sat down, and we talked about everything, how it's supposed to be done. We met everything out. But I wasn't ready yet. I wasn't ready yet to take it. I thought I was. I started the process, and I started doing things. But my mind just wasn't there. So 2 years ago, I said, you know what? We're losing too many kids out here. We lost 58 kids from December 9th till now. And I started working. I started outreaching. I started reaching out to people, getting answers to tell me how to do this and what I need to do. So that's my process of healing. And another thing, like, the murder took place in my home, and me being there is my strength. That's my strength, me being there. Me opening up the door. It took me a long time to go back home. It took me 2 months. But my kids said that my mom wouldn't want me to live like this. So I packed up my stuff, and I went home, and I've been there ever since. And nothing bothers me. I get the best sleep being home. So that's how I deal with it. Everybody say you need to talk to somebody. You need to. You can sit on the table and talk to somebody. My therapy is me being home.
Wow. So when you first initially opened the door to the house of your return, what thoughts came through your mind? You know, did you have, like, visions of what happened? And, like, how has it been, like, you know, like, how do you, and also how do you feel now when you go into your house? Like, do you ever think about it? You know, does it ever play in your mind when you open that door?
I don't think about it as much. You know, it's something that I'm never going to get past. But I'm dealing with it. I'm taking it one day at a time, and I think now in 2023, I'm better with it.
Okay.
Now, if you would have asked me a couple of years ago, I would have told you I don't know, and I couldn't talk about it. I could talk about it now.
Yeah, I remember. What advice do you have to people listening who lost their loved ones to violence, like, to be able to cope, like, you know, do you have any advice for them on how to process and get through it?
Well, what I can say is don't give up. You got to keep calling. They want us to give up. They don't want us to call. You got to find something that you got to put your pain into. You're moving.
Okay. So you've been able to get through your healing process, and I know I remember a couple of years ago it was really hard for you to speak about it, and I felt like the pain in your eyes, you know, and that's why, you know, a lot of the people, you know, kind of inspired me to do that event, you know, and it turned out wonderful. I was so happy that you ended up in the paper. So, but we have a little bit of background noise, Mike. I don't know what it is, but it's just coming through the radio.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. So what do you hope to accomplish in your mother's name? Like, what is the most important thing to you to, like, have your, you know, your mother's legacy go on? Like, how, like, what do you want out of this life before you take your last breath, before you close your eyes?
The most important thing for me right now is getting to open the Joyce J. McKinnon Safe Haven. To save some of these kids out here that has no one to listen to them, no one to be there for them. You got kids out here raising themselves. You got kids out here, the parents are scared of the kids. It's no direction no more. Like, I think their parents' skills went out the window. Like, I don't know. is it, I don't know if it's the parents being on drugs. I mean, and they letting their kids do whatever. I just don't know.
What was your process, you know, when you were going through the police? Like, what type of problems did you encounter, you know, when it came to the individual who murdered, you know, being charged?
What was
one of the major problems that you encountered, you know, when you, you know, I'm sure you had to report the murder to the police and everything. Like, what was the most difficult thing that you had to encounter in that process?
When they took us down to the police station, like, we did it.
Oh, wow.
Like, the way they were questioning us, I mean, it was horrible. Like, they had us down here for, like, 4 hours, like, just interrogating us. And they're, like, and I'm like,
wow.
Like,
That's horrible. Not paying attention.
But not only that, I had to call 911 10 times. Not only that, but my daughter had to go out there to flag the ambulance down to come to the house. Like, I just don't understand, like, why in our community? Like, why in our community? That wouldn't have happened back in Longport or Ventnor or Margate. It wouldn't have happened. Brigantine, like, in the urban area.
Right. Do you think that had the ambulance arrived, like, you know, and this might be a really difficult question, you know, and I'm hoping I'm not overstepping any boundaries, but do you think that if the ambulance had arrived promptly, do you think your mother's life could have been spared?
I did my investigation. So it should have took them 3 minutes to get to me. If they had the police officer stationed to where they were supposed to be around that time, they would have caught the murderer of my mom. But, you know, they was at Dunkin' Donuts. And, you know, it was... You know, you hear things, you start hearing things when people know who it is. So I don't think my mom wouldn't have made it. My mom wouldn't have made it, but it would have gave me some justice if they would have arrived there one time.
Wow.
Not nobody got to be chasing them to bring you to the house. Right? I mean, like, you're working in a field like that, you should know where you're going, you should know the area.
Yeah. So, being able, you know, Donald Lacey, you know, was able to look his daughter Taylor in the eye. You know, I was reading, and it's, you know, now I was reading something, and it said that you wanted to be able to do one thing. You wanted to be able to look the person who killed your mother and ask why. Do you think that you will ever get that chance?
Listen to this. When I went to pick up my mom's belongings, well, her jewelry, he was out there. And they wanted me to talk to him. I did. And I asked him, like, why? Why me? What did I do so wrong to you for you to bring this drama to my house? Answer. Like a little smile on his face, like he didn't give a damn. He was going away for the rest of his life. It was like it didn't matter.
Wow. I'm really sorry to hear that. You know, definitely, I know Donald's daughter has been gone for a long time, and you know, your mother has, you know, been gone for a little while as well. I'm really sorry to hear about the loss, you know, of both of your loved ones, you know. I need you to just stay put because we have a track next by International Internet, DJ Legend Brother O.
Mm-hmm. Here's a song that I wrote about 3 weeks ago. Every once in a while, I like to write something to my creator because I believe in him. We need you right now. There's no one else to turn to but you, yeah. You're the only answer to the situation. We need you.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Power of Thought, featuring Luciana Speaks, which is a product of WBNN, brought to you by Ngozi Towns Multimedia. Dial in 516-453-9133 to join the conversation. Today's topic is violence and vulnerability. I want to bring on my next guest, which is Mikey D. Mikey D, are you in the building?
Yeah. We in the building. What's going on?
How you doing? Hello, my brother.
I'm good. Yeah. Took me 3 hours and 45 minutes and 62 seconds to get here.
Before I talk to you, I just want to say thank you to Veronica for, you know, taking the time to tell me her story. I really appreciate you very, very much. And, you know, I thank all of my guests. And thank you, Mikey, for, you know, taking the time to come on. I want to know, what is your opinion when I want to speak about this, about the music? You know, first of all, because I want everybody to know exactly who you are. You guys can Google Mikey D and you'll find him and know exactly who he is. But I want you to tell me who you are. Tell the listening audience, 19 million people, who you are.
Oh, yeah. I'm Mikey D, a.k.a. Playboy Mikey D. Playboy don't mean I chase all the girls. Playboy is just my swag, the way that I carry myself. I'm a rapper or MC from Queens, New York, Laurelton, Queens to be exact. I was down with a group called the L.A. Posse with the legendary Paul C. McCaskey. I was down with a group called Main Source, which is another legendary group. I'm the winner of the 1988 New Music Seminar Battle for World Supremacy Champion. So I battled a lot of the top dogs in the game at the time. I defeated the legend Melly Mel in a one-on-one battle. And, you know, I'm still pushing forward since 79-80 to right now. So, yeah, Playboy Mikey D in the building.
Yes, you are. So, listen, I have my own, like, opinion as far as music is concerned. You know, when I was younger and I would listen to music, you know, certain things I wouldn't pay attention to because I was a kid, you know. And I realized, to me, I feel like music can be, like, a weapon of mass destruction to us, you know.
Yeah,
a lot of times, you know, yeah, that's what I feel. And I feel, you know, it influences your behavior, you know, as far as, like, it can make you happy. You know, when you're going through difficult things and you listen to music, it can take away your pain. But it can also make you angry, you know, if you're listening to certain lyrics that are violent, you know, and it can promote violent tendencies. I want to know, can you tell me, from the time you started in the music industry to now, what is your opinion on how things have changed and correlated to, like, violent behavior that we see today?
Well, it changed dramatically from the time that I started. I mean, when I started, there were no records out. You know what I mean? It wasn't on the radio. It wasn't a worldwide phenomenon at the time. It was just, you know, kids in the Bronx and, you know, actually the five boroughs to be exact, you know, doing this thing that they call hip-hop. Now, once it hit the radio, one of the first songs was the Sugar Hill Gang, which is Rapper's Delight, which was, it was a party vibe. It felt good. It was young kids that were happy. It made you want to just dance. It made you want to sing along and have a good time, you know. And then even after the partying era, it came with a message. Look, Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five, the song that was a hit, it says it all, the message. They told the story of what was going on inside the community. They weren't saying that they were doing this, but this is what they were seeing. And they was reporting what went on in the hood to the rest of the world, you know. And then even after that era, we had Fight the Power. Everybody wanted this black power, this black pride. Everybody wanted to have knowledge of self. You know, we were walking around with the red, black, and green, and we were pumping our fists, and everything was positive. But you know something? The way they rule the world is divide and conquer. So after the Fight the Power movement, you know, when everything was red, black, and green, and everybody was unified and together, they broke that up with the induction of the gangster rap. Now you got gangster rap, you know, not taking anything away from the talent of the artist. It's just the message that the mainstream media, you know, the industry, the corporation, you know, once hip hop became commercialized, and it was on that big scale, that's when a lot of like program directors, you know, they're programming your mind, basically. The youth are the ones that are into this music. So what do? You get a program director. He knows what to play. He knows what they like, and that's programming the mind. So you got the gangster rap, and people running around talking about F you and everybody's tough. And majority of these guys were actors. You know, rappers are great actors. You know what I mean? But nowadays, these guys, and again, not to take away from their talent, but these guys are rapping about what they're really doing. So if these guys, you know, say they want to kill you, then that's what they really want to do. These guys talk about killing their ops, and you know, which is the opposition or opponent or the person on the opposite side. When one of those guys dies, these guys disrespect the graves. They disrespect the funerals. It's insane. And then the media and the corporations are pushing this music. And you know what it's also doing? It's also funding these damn jails. It's like jail and hip-hop goes hand in hand. Jail, funerals, and hip-hop. You know what I mean? So it's just crazy. It's a dramatic change.
Yeah. So how does it feel to you being as though, you know, like, you know, let's say your performance, you know, in October, you know, and I watched you perform on stage, you did an amazing job. You had a very, very, very positive song. And it's like, that's what I think is really missing, you know, from music. You know, how does it feel to you being as though all the music that's out now compared to your music, like, how do you feel as an artist? You know, like, how do you feel emotionally when you see these things, like on TV, and a lot of this negative music is being promoted? How does that make you feel?
What it is, there's a divide. There's a divide, and I take some responsibility for it as an older artist, and I think we lost control when we were trying to keep it to ourselves. Well, I'm not going to say me alone, but like the older generation, they wanted to keep it to themselves. They didn't want other artists to get on. They didn't respect the younger artists, and that trickled down. So it's like we weren't paying attention to what was going on. We let hip hop get out of our hands. We let other people take control. So now what it is these younger guys, they do it from their pocket and not their heart. They want to make a dollar. They want to make this money. They see the glamour, the glitz, and all of that stuff, and a lot comes with that. And these labels take advantage of these young guys because the younger they are, the less they know about the ins and outs of the industry. Guys like me, I'm seasoned. I know the business. They don't want to rock with me. They try to put a cap on your talent, like, if you're a certain age, you're too old, which is bull crap, you know. So I think, like, what it is, not a generation gap, but there's just a disconnect from the older generation and the new generation, where the younger generation really doesn't want to take advice from the older generation because they don't think, you know, we got money or whatever. It's about, you know, the stuff that they see or whatever. Me, myself, I consider myself an OG because I offer guidance. I'm not an original gangster. I'm an OG because I offer guidance. I want these young cats to just learn from my mistakes. You know what I'm saying? Don't make the same mistakes I made. I paved the way for y'all to get the bag the right way, you know. But we have, like I said, we have that disconnect, and there's not enough rappers like me that really want to mix it up with these younger guys and point them in a direction of success without all the drama, you know.
What do you think about, like, you know, music videos? And I know music videos have changed a lot since I was younger to now. a lot of the things that are displayed, you know, I feel like a lot of, you know, visual activity can shape the way that, you know, your perception in your mind or what you think is normal, you know. If you don't think for yourself, you keep continually seeing the same, like, you know, like just basically programming, you know, on TV. Like, what can you tell me when it comes in relation to music and music videos and what you think, how much impact that has on, like, newer artists and their music coming up and how much of an impact you think that music videos have an impact on society as a whole?
It's so different. Like, because my era, man, the labels were, first of all, the labels were paying for the videos because these videos were $20,000 and up. We're talking about the big movie equipment out in the streets with the tracks and the doggone cameras on the tracks and they pushing it down, you know, big stuff like that. Now, these young guys, they have social media. They have the internet. They have websites. And the main thing that's making them a lot of money are their telephones. You got the camera in these phones. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
They got these followings. They know how to manipulate the internet. So they got it made. They can make a video with their phone. You don't really need talent to make a hit record because nobody wants to sit there and listen to a rapper with skills rap. They just want to have fun. They want to smoke their weed. They want to sip on their scissor or whatever, and they just want to listen to a vibe. So today's music is more of a vibe than it is about the skills. You know what I'm saying? So that's the, another difference. And these phones, boy, forget about it, man. These phones, these cameras is going to put videographers and photographers out of business pretty soon. I'm telling you.
What do you, like, you know, the portrayal of, I'm going to say, like, women in, like, music videos, do you think that how much of an impact that it has, like, on relationships in our community when it comes to respect and, you know, when things turn into, you know, like, violent behavior when it comes to, you know, domestic situations? Like, what is your perspective on that?
Well, it's just crazy. It's just crazy. Because remember when I was coming up, we had girls like Salt-N-Pepa, Queen Latifah, women with strength and power, women that respected themselves, women that wouldn't dare put on a bikini and sit their behinds. And you know what I'm saying? Not to take away from the beauty. I don't want to take away from beauty or anything like that. But there's a way that a woman should carry herself at the end of the day. There's a way, but then again, this is what the industry has become. This is what corporate, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
What they turned it into is show business. This is show business. It's a part of entertainment. You know, it is what it is. They see a dollar. They don't care about morals, respect, integrity. They care about a bag, money. You know, and it's a shame. It's a shame, you know, but what are we going to do? What are we going to do? What can we do?
I wanted to just read something, and I wanted to know your opinion. In five experiments, 500 college students were asked to listen to such violent songs as Shoot 'Em Up by Cypress Hill and Hit 'Em Hard by Run DMC, and such nonviolent songs such as Finger Looking Good by the Beastie Boys, Love Versus Loneliness by Suicidal Tendencies. Researchers also included the lyrics of humorous, violent, and nonviolent songs such as A Boy Named Sue and Johnny Cash, Hello Mother, Hello Father, by Alan Sherman. After listening to the songs, the students performed various word association tasks to test whether they linked more non-aggressive words with aggressive words, or filled incomplete words with vowels to make aggressive words. They also reported their feelings of hostility as measured by the state hostility scale, ranking sentences based on their emotions after hearing the songs. The results indicate a relationship between violent song lyrics and increased aggressive thoughts and feelings of hostility. Humorous violent songs also increase aggression levels relative to humorous non-violent songs, according to Anderson. These findings held even after researchers controlled for the listener's gender and personality differences, as well as the reactions to the different performing artists and musical styles. While more research on effects of violent lyrics must be done, there's another type of entertainment media referring to violence now has been demonstrated to have some negative effects. I want to know, like, what your thoughts is on that particular experiment.
You know what they left out? They left out the frequency of the music. There's frequencies that go on.
Yes.
Some frequencies can make you feel happy. Some frequencies can make you feel angry. So if you sing some happy words on a low frequency, it's not going to mix. It's not going to catch. You know what I mean? It's like frequencies. And, you know, it depends on how you're feeling at the time, I guess. I don't know, but that's an ill, that's an ill little thing they did. You know, they should have talked about the frequencies, though.
Yeah, definitely. Well, they're not going to put that out there for everybody to know. But, you know, I wanted to know one more question I have, and I want to make sure, like, when I'm done, I want you to tell everybody, like, where they can reach you. But I wanted to know, what do you think about, you know, when artists come and they go to a record label and you have the executives and he has, like, a plan to, you know, for our community to, you know, produce certain music, to make us, you know, have those violent tendencies. Like, there's a purpose behind all of these things, you know, and knowing that these people are hungry for money, they're willing to put certain music out to being controlled and being willingly controlled just to be able to sit and make a name for themselves and just to be able to put food on the table, you know. And these younger people are influenced by, you know, I can tell you, you know, in our community, you know, it's so cool. We had to have chains around our neck a lot of times, and like jewelry, cars. Like a lot of times we stand in line for a bunch of sneakers. But if we're giving out free college classes, you wouldn't see too many people, you know. Or they give out education or something that is, you know, going to be beneficial to you for your whole entire life. You may not see those people, but let's say the sneakers come out and they're hypothetically $500. You see a long line, you know. So what do you think about, you know, the hold that the music industry has over the younger artists and how they shape them and how those artists are shaping our future of the children and the people who are, you know, being able to see this today, because they don't have recollection of the music from the past that we listened to that was great, that was peaceful, that was calm, that was joyful, stuff you could play at the barbecue. So what do you think about that?
Well, the name of the game is show business. Show business is 90% show, 10% business. Do I got that right? It's 90% business and 10% show. So you got to have these younger cats, they don't know the business aspect. That's why they don't want the older artists around, because we know what's going on. We know what's popping. Like these younger artists, with the, like you said, with the jewelry and the money and all of this, all of that stuff is advanced. They give that stuff to these artists in advance so they can own them. Now when they sign on the dotted line and they got this big lump sum of money and all of this jewelry, they're already in debt. They already owe this back to the company from which they signed and all of that. And you know what these labels are doing now, too? These labels, they try to get smart and to start putting life insurance policies out on these younger artists, because they kill each other at a rapid rate. And guess who's collecting the money off of their deaths? It ain't their families.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Yeah. So these guys, these young guys, they got a lawyer up. But you know something? At the same time, the younger artists, they have it good as well, because we no longer need these record labels and all of that stuff. Everything is an independent thing now, especially with social media. You could build your fan base up. And like I said, these younger artists, they know how to manipulate the internet. So they could build a nice fan base, get themselves a nice website, or they can even deal with Cash App and these telephones. Look, I'm going to make a MP3. You want to buy it? Boom. You know what I'm saying? They can go hand in hand, but on through the phones and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's crazy, man. Times is weird right now. I just hope everything is good, because I ain't stopping. I'm 55 years old, and I'm on top of my game lyrically. I'm still doing my thing. You know why I'm doing it? Because I love it. I love to do it, and I don't rap from my pocket. I rap from my heart.
Yes, definitely. Well, Mikey, I just want to say I thank you so much for, you know, coming on. I want to bring on my next guest. I don't want you to go. I want you to stay. Please, because I still want to talk to you and get your final thoughts of, you know, for the night. So if you can stay on, I want everyone to know where they can find you. So I just want to thank you, you know, first for taking the time out to come on my show. I really appreciate you, and you know, thank you for being a positive influence in the industry. So I have my next guest, who is absolutely wonderful. His name is King George. He has a magazine, and I am going to let him tell you about his magazine from his own words. King George, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, hello.
how you doing? Thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm definitely appreciative. First and foremost, I am King George. I am the owner of TY Productions. I'm the curator of Black 31 magazine. TY stands for Thorough, Young, Intelligent, Teach Youth Intelligence. And on the other hand, we have Black, which stands for Beautiful Love, Always Carries Knowledge. And attached to that is the number 31, meaning champion. And also significant for the 31 features in the magazine. Now, to give you all a little insight of the magazine, we are strictly a magazine meant to connect and inspire people globally. So our sections break down like this. We have a foundation of creators section, where we highlight all business owners, artists, and book authors. Then we have a community news section, where we highlight community news stories that have been like wiped under the rug, that nobody even want to speak on anymore. So in our first issue, we had highlighted Mr. Dante Perez Jones. That was the guy who was hung out Bluebell, PA, June 26th of 2022. So we highlighted that just for him and his family, and especially for his mother, because we found out that his mother, she went live on the air on Channel 3 here in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and not only was the family disrespected, this guy was hung, and they decided to throw an event at the park 2 hours later at an active crime scene where this man was hung at. So we decided to highlight that in the magazine. We have a quote of the month in the magazine. We have a section of mental health for all men, mental health awareness, and we have Malcolm X actually highlighting the face of that section, mental health awareness for all men. We have a beauty love section. Beauty love is similar to the Jet Beauty magazine. So kind of like this magazine, this entire magazine is not a replacement of Jet Black of Jet magazine, but it is something that will remind us of Jet Black magazine, because we have nothing that we can go back to and look at our coffee tables now and say, where's our magazine at, like we used to have in the 90s when we had Jet Black.
Yeah. I remember.
Absolutely. We have a women's empowerment section, where women speak on their empowerment, they speak on their rights, they speak on even exploitation, things that have hurt them throughout their time, throughout life. We have a family turmoil section where people speak on the trauma passed down from family and generations. We have an out-of-prison section where we at least highlight at least one brother getting out of prison, showing positivity and telling the young kids that this is not the place to go to. These are the reasons why I went to jail. And explaining to them, we need to be better within society. Also, we have a youth dream section, highlighting the youth, highlighting the little girl down the street with the lemonade stand, down to the football coach, even down to the athlete going to college, even down to the kid who just got a 4.0 and going off to college also. And last but not least, we have a poetry section. So to finalize all that off, we like to give people just some sweet poetry so it can relax them and calm them. And most importantly, I just want to say that this magazine is something to really connect our people and to help us all grow. I really have a purpose with this magazine to see a lot of us really highlight our problems and turn it into positivity. Like all the stories that I heard from everybody who spoke on here tonight, they were actually prolific. And I would love to highlight all y'all in my magazine, to be honest with you.
I knew it.
Like,
that tells you who to choose. That tells you who to choose. So, you know, all of you, you know, like every single one of you is just, you know, is just put on my heart, you know. And even when he said, "Isn't she lovely?" I kid you not, I heard that song a couple of times before I even asked him to come on the show. I'm like, wow. When he said that, I was like, wow, that's amazing, you know. But I want you to read your poem that, you know, is going along with tonight's topic. That's what I want to hear. So are you ready?
Absolutely. So, not a problem. Not a problem.
Okay.
This poem is titled "A Brown Boy Traumatized History." The young teen who killed an old man who looked like him. He was suffering from abuse at home from his own mother. So he decided to take all that anger outside of the house. Without thought, he struck a man to death. Old enough to be his own grandfather while his own friends watched. This reminds me of the physical whipping the slave masters performed on the people of color while their own wives stood there and watched, but it wasn't the wives' problem. It was the system problem. Pain hurt so bad because the whip and white hands separated our unity and turned us against one another. In this new era, ask the brown boy how he feels about his actions. Silence. No one cares. That's the end of the poem.
Wow. And what inspired you to write this particular poem?
To be honest with you, a lot of my poetry, a lot of my work, it's geared towards the community. And seeing that a lot of kids decide to not even use their brains, but also what truly inspired me, it was a story that came out here in Philadelphia. It was a story between young teens. And one of the young teens, they decided to attack an old man, and they actually beat him with a cone. And they actually killed him.
Wow.
And you realize the story behind it, that this young kid, he was getting abused at home. He had no voice at home. He was getting beat and everything at home.
Wow.
Like a lot of things that I write is geared toward the children, because I see that the children going through a lot of pain, because we have lost parents now. We have parents that like to be friends. We have parents that don't care to raise the children. We have parents that's even missing. And the children is so confused, but most importantly, the children is hurt. So they taking all this anger and they taking it outside into the streets.
Mm-hmm. What do you, so I wanted you to come on because, you know, just so you guys know, I actually found him on Instagram, you know, and just something in my heart was telling me to reach out to him. It was very, very at the end of my, I don't know why, And, you know, I'm all about positivity, and I watch a few videos, and I'm like, you know what? I want to do this show, but I also want to give, like, a positive, you know, information out there, somebody doing something positive in the community, you know, because you don't always have to settle for what you see around you, you know, especially when you're in a community where there's lots of violence, you know. In my city, I remember looking up when my city was, like, one of the most dangerous cities, you know, in the United States. I don't know where the level is at now, but I remember that. But I grew up here, so, you know, it wasn't, to me, in my, like, you know, how I lived, it wasn't like that. The most violent thing that I ever witnessed was I lived in a building, and I saw two people talking, and, you know, I'm looking on my balcony, and I hear gunshots, you know. After a period of time passed and everything, just something drew me to come outside, and I came outside, and I saw a guy laying in the grass, and I was like, oh, my God, I think he's dead. And it just, like, I never saw that before. And I prayed, and when I prayed, he lifted his head up, and I don't know if he passed away or not, but the officer came over and did something, and all, he had, like, a purple glove on, and it was full of blood. And I'm like, this is crazy. Like, you know, this is absolutely crazy that, you know, I'm living in. After this happened, my city, like, absolutely started going crazy because people who were put away a long time ago when I was in elementary school, started coming out of jail and trying to take over their territory, and it got really crazy. So what in your community do you think is the most positive thing that you can do to, you know, help, you know, give a voice to and also create a positive impact in people's lives where they don't turn down to the wrong path?
The most positive thing, to be honest with you, that's why I decided to create the magazine, to give people just that platform to be able to share their dreams, to be able to share their pain, to be able to share all the issues and release them page, and to actually be highlighted and to share with others, to inspire others. So I feel like that's a part of my purpose, actually making sure that I provide this platform to not only help the people, but, you know, like, everything is reciprocating. We all inspiring one another. So I feel like as long as I get people back to thinking again, that's the main thing first. Like, we, you know, we always think about doing so many things, but the main thing, we have to get people back on track to thinking. Because we have too many people not thinking.
Mm. Yes, you're right. That's why this show is called The Power of Thought, because, it's very important how you think. And when you wake up in the morning, the type of negative or positive thoughts you have is exactly where you're at today. And I want to know, what initially, like, was it just to be, like, something positive in the community? Is that why you started your magazine?
Can you say that one more time?
I said, what initiated you to start your magazine? Just because you wanted to be something positive in the community?
What initiated it? Positivity, to be honest with you, it lives within, but also I started it, my music inspired me. You know, through the music, through me writing as a child, like, I've been writing since I've been about 8 years old, and writing short stories. But most importantly, my books. It's so crazy that you say that the name of the show is The Power of Thoughts. I had three books, which is a poetry series. I have two out right now. They're on blurb.com. One is The Golden Thoughts, and one is The Platinum Thoughts. So that inspired me to get into the magazine, because I wanted to get into a different form of writing and journalism, so that helped inspire me to write the magazine.
Well, that's wonderful. So I want you to hold on, because I want to get your final thoughts. We have to. I have a caller. We have caller one in queue. Caller one, you have 2 minutes. You know, we don't go past 11:30. So. State your name. Where you calling from?
Peace and blessings, Kiana. Peace and blessings to your guests. This is Sister Bessie the Truther, your fellow host. And I'd like to thank your guests for telling their story of their loved ones. And I send my condolences to them. This is a very important subject, but I like what the brother said just now. The people in our community are dealing with trauma. And our ancestors did not have any mental health. So the blood travels, and we are still suffering from trauma from 600 years ago until today. And it's up to us to change ourselves and to love each other and respect each other. But overall, I love your show. I came in a little bit late. I don't know whether you received, record, but if you did, I want to say congratulations. And I love what you're doing, and I'm going to continue listening. And this is very helpful to our community. And thank you for what you do, Tiana.
Thank you so much, Sister Bessie. And please tell us when your next show is.
Yes, my show is March the 3rd. I will be back on. And peace and blessings to all of you. Thank you so much for what you do for the community.
Okay, thank you so much. I appreciate you calling in. I want to say thank you to all my guests. I thank you definitely, Donald Macy, for telling your story. You know, it's absolutely wonderful, you know, and I know that you touched some people when you touched one of my guests with you being able to forgive someone else, you know. And for me, I struggled throughout my life because I'm very forgiving. I don't hold grudges. I don't believe in revenge. My mother taught me from a young age that God said vengeance is mine. You know, so I don't do it. You know, I don't even think about it. It's not even in my blood. And the funny thing is, God can take care of something way better than I can. You know, and I grew up watching, you know, continuous cycle from someone like, I'm going to get you back. And then they don't realize the stuff coming back on them. It could come back later, you know, and it never stops. You know, so I when I saw that you forgave, it was almost like, not that I needed it, but it was like almost like wonderful validation for me and who I am, because I've been like, you know, always people say things to me because I forgive. Like, why do you forgive that? You know, you should do this or you should do that. But they don't know who I serve, you know. So I live my life to, you know, going to bed and laying down my eyes every night knowing that I never wronged anybody. So if I do reach out for revenge, that is definitely, you know, going to be on my conscience and definitely something that, you know, could come back on me. It come back on somebody I love. I'm not about to put that energy in my life, you know. And I understand people who are like that, you know, because a lot of people who are very sensitive, you know, and just, you know, have had a lot of things happen to them, they don't know how to cope. So just the immediate thing is to, all right, well, we need to even the score, you know, but sometimes it's not the healthiest way, you know, and you have to think about that because you may not have something directly come back on you, but it can come back on your kids, your mother, your father, your best friend, your husband, your wife, you know, and you don't even realize that's what's happening to the people around you that love you, you know. Veronica, I thank you for coming on with your telling your story about your mother. You know, I love you. I really appreciate you, you know, and what you do in our community. King George, I appreciate, you know, you, and, you know, I really appreciate you coming on and giving a positive light to the show and offering my guests, you know, a spotlight. That was very, very nice of you. And Mikey D, who he has to go, but I just want to say I really appreciate him. Mikey D is actually a friend of mine, you know, and I just reached out to him because I wanted his influence. And he's been in the music industry a very, very long time, and it's always been a concern of mine. If you are a victim, you know, of homicide, I want you to know that my heart and soul goes out to you, and the pain that you have experienced, the pain that you are experiencing, and the pain that you may experience later on. Know that I'm thinking of you, and I'm wishing you nothing but healing to your mind, to your body, to your soul. I do not know what it's like, I have to admit. I can only think of the closest people to me, and if I was able to, you know, have to endure that. I did lose 3 friends, you know, but it wasn't the violence. So it doesn't equate to someone taking the life unnecessarily and, you know, that person just not being in your life, especially your child, you know, something that you made into this world that you expect to, you know, outlive you, you know. I'm very sorry for that, for anybody that's listening, not just the people who are on my show, but anybody, any of you, 19 million people listening, any of you, you know, I want you to, you know, please seek healing. You deserve to be happy. I know that life may not be the same, but you deserve to be happy, and you deserve to be feel free. You deserve to feel light and walk through this world, you know. I'm pretty sure your family member would not want you to spend your days mourning. I'm not saying that I don't understand the process. I don't understand, you know, the feelings and emotions that go along with losing a loved one. But I just want peace for you. I don't know. I may not know your name. I may not know who you are or what you look like, but I care, and I want peace for you, and I want peace for your mind, body, and soul. You know, I hope that all my guests were able to shed some light in their situations, and a lot of people who ever went through the same thing, I hope that, you know, they reached you. I hope in some capacity that they touched you. And I will be praying for all of my guests, you know, and I really appreciate every single one of you coming on and taking the time. And I had 5, and, you know, but, you know, one wasn't able to be on, but it's amazing that I got the people that I did, and, you know, the people who were able to, you know, it's a difficult situation sometimes when you hear other people talking about the same situation you went through, and then you realize you might not be able to handle it. And I kind of understand that, you know, you might think you're ready, and the time comes where reality hits you in the face and all the emotions and things that you thought you were prepared for, you just cannot, you know, especially if it's something that's fresh in your mind every single day. So, again, I thank Brother O for playing the tracks that he did. He is, you know, the owner of this station, so any music that you heard was from him, you know, all the selections that you heard today. And I just appreciate every single one of you listening. You know, my heart goes out to every single one of you. Even if you haven't lost a loved one and you're dealing with any type of pain, any type of, you know, issues that are causing you not to be in peace, I just want you to be at peace. And now we will have Englishy time.
Gave you my heart and all my soul, but Oh my God, that song is so beautiful. Thank you so much for the music tonight, Brother O. And Tiana, thank you so much for your show tonight. What an awesome, amazing show with your awesome guest. And tonight, everybody, was night six of our WBNN Beverly Nation's 10th anniversary celebration. So all week we have been celebrating 10 years of internet radio broadcasting excellence. 10 years. And what a great week, everybody. And the show tonight, my goodness. You know, you all were talking about, like, women and men and relationships and, you know, domestic violence and different things like that. And, you know, what causes that? You know, no one really knows, but there are so many women that experience that, and also men that experience it as well, because we have some women out there that actually beat on their man, and their man is afraid of them, which is crazy, but no one should be hitting on anyone, physically abusing anyone, or mentally abusing anyone, verbally abusing anyone. It's just not right. And there are some men out there who looks at, like, if a woman, say for instance me, I'm very outspoken, I'm opinionated, I speak my mind, and there's some men out there that see that as being disrespectful to a man. So there's some men out there that would call that disrespectful if you don't agree with what they're saying. They'll say, well, you're disrespectful. Well, that can't be disrespectful, because everyone has their own opinion. No two people think the same, and there is no two people that's going to agree with every single thing that each other does so or says. So everyone's entitled to their own opinion. So men out there that, you know, fall into that category, you know, let your woman be who she is. Don't try to shape her and mold her into what you want her to be, because then she will not be herself and she won't be happy. So to have a happy woman, that woman has to be free to be who she is, and she is entitled to speak her mind and to disagree if she doesn't agree. So you have to accept that. And we have to all agree to disagree and be good with that. So thank you so much for the show tonight, Tiana. And again, Brother O, the music was awesome. And I also want to take a moment to congratulate you, Tiana, of course, on your fourth WBNN All-Time Connection record consecutively as a new host. What an awesome thing, with the historic Darlene Lawrence Championship honoring our late Hall of Famer, Miss Darlene Lawrence. So, again, congratulations, Tiana, on your fourth WBN All-Time Connection record. Oh, boy. WBNN has advertising through Ngozi Time Multimedia. We're on Pinterest, Instagram, and Twitter at Ngozi_time and Oladele Milewe at Facebook. Oladele Milewe and Ngozi at Facebook. Any comments and suggestions for our wonderful programming tonight? Oladele.Ngozi@my.com. For our mothers and fathers' favorite producer, Oladele Milewe and Ngozi, I am WBNN Commissioner Dr. Chinchilla J, saying good night and good luck to all the folks out there in Armed Forces Radio that support us on a constant basis. Now stay tuned for News Forum with WBNN Host of the Year, Dr. Chinchilla Jonesia, the Queen of Justice. And that is yours truly, who's talking to you right now. That's Sunday night, 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on WBNN, or you can tune in at www.blogtalkradio.com. And Sunday is Super Bowl Sunday, and it will be Super Sunday on News Forum. We're going to have featured guests of that have been wrongfully incarcerated, well, that are wrongfully incarcerated right now, and a couple that are not any longer wrongfully incarcerated, to share their story on Super Sunday, and also families that will share their stories. And we will also have a couple candidates on who are running for office this upcoming primary. All right. Now, back to Tiana Speaks.
Well, first I want to, I want to definitely thank all of my guests, and I really appreciate every single person that's listening, you know, and what I said, I meant from my heart. You know, if you are thinking of committing an act of violence, I want you to sit, when you hold that gun, and you think it's cool, you're angry, and picture the person looking back at you, no matter what they did. If you're trying to shoot a woman, picture that being your mother or somebody you love, your sister, your niece, Imagine them never being able to breathe, to hug you, to kiss you ever again. That's what you're doing when you're murdering these people. When you're sitting here and you're holding your gun and you're shooting it in any direction and you're killing someone's children that are outside playing, like, they don't have a life, you know, after you take it away. And you should be ashamed. And I'm not afraid to tell you that. You should absolutely be ashamed. You know, if you can't handle your emotions and you can't handle your anger, you need to get help, because this stuff has to stop. The violence, like, it really has to stop. We need to stop taking families away, you know, from individuals who love them. You know, I'm sure you don't want anybody to take your child away. I'm sure you don't want anyone to take your mother or father away. Granted, if you have a great relationship, you know, so please, if you are an angry individual and you feel like you're so angry that you want to pick up a gun, a knife, or any type of weapon that can take another individual's life where they cannot wake up tomorrow and have a breath of fresh air, they can't blink, they can't eat, they can't sleep, they can't tell their kids that they love them again. Look at how many kids are in so much pain that they don't have their parents anymore. You know, it's a shame. And a lot of you listening, you probably are some of the people who have done it. So I ask you to change. I ask you to find it in your heart to change. You want to waste your life and be behind bars, and you could be doing a positive thing and bringing joy to your face instead of bringing sorrow and sadness to other individuals. Please, take time to think. This is the power of thoughts. And your power of your thoughts, you have. Please use them. Good night, everybody.
Yeah.